Dr. Kevin DeCock, thank you so much for joining us today. The UN General Assembly meeting on HIV and AIDS last year agreed on working towards universal access to prevention, care, treatment, and support, all by 2010. It's certainly a laudable goal. In your mind, is it an achievable one?
I think it's an achievable goal in some places. I think we have to be realistic that we may not achieve it everywhere, but I think in some parts of the world, scale up of prevention, treatment, care, and support really has gone very well and perhaps best measured as far as treatment's concerned. And some countries are doing very well, others are lagging behind.
What are some examples of success stories?
I think the Caribbean, in terms of treatment scale-up, has done extremely well. We estimate that about 75% of people needing therapy in the Caribbean are actually receiving it. A country like Botswana in southern Africa has achieved very high rates of access to life-saving antiretroviral therapy and also prevention of mother-to-child transmission. In some other places, it's lagging far behind.
What are the keys in those countries that you just mentioned that have helped them to improve their scale-up?
Well, there's many. The most important thing is political commitment and determination to do it. A second one, it has to be organization and everything that goes with that, systems that work, transparency, lack of corruption, etc. And obviously things like infrastructure and external support. But with some countries under difficult circumstances have done quite well, and it shows, you know, with determination it should be able to be done anywhere.
Now, one step in the direction of universal access is certainly getting people to know their HIV status. 2 months ago, WHO and UNAIDS issued new guidance on HIV testing, representing a move towards a more opt-out testing or provider-initiated testing and counseling. What are some of the challenges facing low- and middle-income countries with a generalized epidemic that are now attempting to follow this guidance?
Let me emphasize that WHO and UNAIDS think that all methods of getting people to know their serous status on a voluntary basis should be scaled up. The guidelines you refer to really dealt with how to address testing in healthcare settings. But we need to do much better in community-based settings in getting people to come forward and take up HIV testing and use that information to run their lives. This guidance dealt with clinical settings where people come usually because they're ill or they need health advice. And obviously that's extremely important for scaling up treatment. It has prevention benefit as well, but it's more oriented towards people who are ill. But in developing countries with generalized epidemics, there's an enormous need to scale up knowledge of HIV serous status. The challenges are they're legion. They range from infrastructure to stigma and discrimination in some countries to fear, people being afraid to know their status, and so on. But again, I think progress in some countries has been very encouraging, and you know, we can do this, and we have to do it. You cannot address HIV/AIDS if we don't scale up knowledge of HIV serous status.
You mentioned community-based testing. Why is that important as well, in addition to the clinical-based testing?
Well, when people come to hospitals and health facilities, often it means they're already sick, so they already have immune deficiency from HIV that's quite advanced. People need to learn their serous status before they get ill, not only for protecting their health, but also to prevent transmission to others. So there has to be, you know, across the board, widespread scale-up of different modalities of HIV testing and counseling, but in a way that's voluntary and respects people's rights.
With more people getting tested, there's obviously going to be more people who need treatment. So how can countries, middle-income countries and low-income countries, get prepared for this influx of people needing treatment?
That's absolutely true, that more people knowing their serous status may apparently raise treatment demand. Of course, HIV is very unforgiving, and if people are not tested, the disease will declare itself sooner or later. So they will require therapy and care at some stage. The advantage of coming forward for HIV testing early is that it's actually more cost-effective to treat people before they get seriously ill. But we do need to invest more in assessing the magnitude of the problem and estimating the costs to deal with HIV/AIDS, which, let me emphasize, this is a problem for decades and for generations. This is not a five-year project.
Multi and extensively drug-resistant tuberculosis is an increasing threat. How can HIV and TB programs better coordinate their care?
This is a very important issue. Tuberculosis is the single most important opportunistic infection complicating HIV. It's the leading cause of death in patients with HIV, particularly in sub-Saharan Africa. We need the expertise of both HIV programs and TB programs in their specific diseases, but we need them to work together. And at the point of care, where patients actually come when they're ill, the services really need to be integrated for those individuals. Without that, we are simply going to be unable to address some of the really serious issues like the control of transmission of tuberculosis in healthcare settings, for example, the delivery of antiretroviral therapy to TB patients. So we have to ensure that at the point of care, services are integrated in an effective way.
Does this challenge of integration between these services speak to a larger problem of the healthcare infrastructure in a lot of these countries?
Yes, I think one of the biggest issues around dealing with the HIV/TB problem, and especially the drug resistance problem, is that of health systems. And by that you mean the whole panoply of aspects: human resources, infrastructure, supply chains, logistics, procurement systems, et cetera, et cetera. But a particular difficulty as far as XDR and MDR-TB is concerned is the lack of capacity to diagnose it because of lab infrastructure that's simply not there.
One of the other issues that will probably be talked a lot about at this conference is male circumcision. The WHO has recommended that in countries with generalized epidemics and heterosexual populations, that they urgently consider scaling up access to male circumcision services. Is this happening?
It's beginning to happen, but it needs to happen more quickly in the most heavily affected parts of the world. Male circumcision has been found through carefully conducted clinical trials to reduce HIV infection in men by 60%. That's an extraordinarily powerful intervention. It's more powerful than any other biomedical intervention we have, other than mother-to-child transmission prevention. It's urgent in these countries with high incidence and prevalence that we use every tool that we have. And so in a limited number of settings, scaling up male circumcision, I think, really needs to be addressed much more urgently and in different and imaginative ways.
And how is the WHO working with different countries and advising them to help scale up male circumcision access?
Well, one of WHO's main roles is the provision of technical advice, our so-called normative function, giving guidance, helping countries set policy and so on. So we are working with countries, helping them to develop and implement tools to look at male circumcision, at the sorts of logistic requirements that are there, giving training packages, talking to countries about how this might be done, and so on. But obviously, this is not an easy intervention. I mean, it's relatively simple as far as surgery is concerned, but it's still a surgical intervention. So it comes with many challenges. But unusual as this may be, it is a priority for some of these heavily affected countries to consider this.
And last question for you. A number of people that I've talked to have said that this is going to be one of the most exciting years for science in terms of what's coming out of this conference. To you, what are some of the most exciting things that are going to be discussed here this week in Sydney?
I think it's a very high quality conference. So there's many things being discussed, even if there's no radical new data. I mean, things like male circumcision, for example, other modalities of prevention. Even if there's no new data, some of the discussions are of very high level. But there are some very important individual pieces of science that we do expect to come out. There's some data on the use of acyclovir to suppress herpes in people with HIV to see whether that has any effect on acquisition or transmission of HIV. There's some an important clinical trial of antiretrovirals in infants that's being presented. So there's some interesting discussions on pre-exposure prophylaxis. So there's different issues that indicate this is quite a rich scientific program.
Dr. Kevin DeCock, Director of the Department of HIV/AIDS at the World Health Organization, thanks for joining us today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.